for mental hospitals. And to somebody, somewhere, I had not intended to get in a battle. I just said, that just ain't so. I just came from the clerk's office and I've been locking them up right regularly. Lord, it very idea that anybody would attack the integrity of or attack the position of somebody as revered and respected as John Umstead, and I came to respect him the same way. And so that was the first battle. But from then on, it was always a battle. But, you know, that's the way you get things done and where you get fun out of it, don't
you? Yeah, that was a very special time, both in East Carolina during the 60s and the battle, and since like throughout the East, there was such an excitement.
Well, we have been in the East, you know, as Leo used to say, the sleeping giant. But it really was, in the long run, to our advantage, in that now we've been able to sort of tailor our educational institutions to the needs of the East, and we've been able to locate industries in such a way as not to create industrial slums and wasteland, you know, like some other areas. We paid for it for a long time, but now I think our backwardness has become an asset.
I very much like it.
I do too. It won't change it much more either.
Yeah, this is. Greenville's got traffic science as it is, and it.
Greenville, a nice town, isn't it?
It has grown tremendously. I went there in '67, and in that period, it is.
You were there when somebody was about it.
I came the summer of the university status battle, and right as it went in, so I have this early '60s. I have a sort of blind spot on what happened. Let me ask you a question that I've. Different people have commented and been given different ideas, and I don't know that I would include it in the book, but just for background, as far as Dr. Jenkins' political aspirations, some people have said that his perennial aspirations, I guess since '68, this is the first time I think they were publicized as perhaps for governor, considering running for governor. Some have said that's been a great advantage for East Carolina to have a president active. Others have said, no, that was a disadvantage. That's why they were attacking us. I was just curious as to...
Well, let me just get rid of that business of why they were attacking us right quick. They were attacking us long before Leo Jenkins even got to be president, let alone you go back to the nursing school situation. It was an advantage. In fact, is I don't really think Leo ever had any real aspirations to or ever any intentions to running for public office, but the threat of it certainly was an asset to us. And anybody today, you know, you've got to be active in the arena for people to respect you. And he may today talk about running for governor and may even run for the purpose of talking about issues that ought to be raised. But back in those days, I don't think Leo ever had. I think he threw it out. Leo was pretty smart, and he was a planner. If you talk to him, he plans a lot more than I do. And he knew what reactions it had. So I tell you right now, we wouldn't have had him without it. We wouldn't have had those things down there without him. We might have had some things, but not what we got today.
Well, that was your impression, is what I had looked at and just seemed more logical, that he was really using the political threat, perhaps, to say, I could do a lot of damage to you, whoever the other candidates were, but if I draw out, then it was a trade-off, or could be, for support.
Well, you know, give you a personal example. When I first came home from Washington, I really was pretty sick for about a year, recuperating. And I sort of kept a low profile because I just didn't feel like getting out. In the minds of many people in government, they just sort of wrote me off, you know, Robert's happy to be home, Robert's not going to be involved anymore. And you'd be amazed that people who, don't mean they were rude to me, but you know, my name just wasn't on the list anymore. Mm-hmm. And when it suddenly became apparent that I was not going to sit back and retire, and you'd be surprised how nice people have been to me since then. And that's human nature. Yeah. It's not a criticism of anybody.
Where the power resides, yeah. Or potential, it's an appealing.
And that, I think, is what Leo was doing. Leo was saying, you know, as long as I'm out there, they don't know what I'm going to do. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't think, you know, everybody in many ways would like to be governor. There are many ways that I'd like to be governor. But there are more ways in which I wouldn't want to be governor. And that's why we didn't run in 72, you know. I just couldn't stand the idea of having to make 3,000 appointments and all that sort of stuff. But I had nothing but praise for Leo Jenkins. And I have never seen a selfish bone in his body. Now, we kid him about his ego.
Well, that's healthy.
But you got to have a certain amount of it. And
I think that's one of his greatest strengths, because it has protected him from being little and been even fighting back, and when he certainly had cause to. It seems like would you agree that his ego strength has been a nice protection?
By all means. One of the biggest criticisms that my friends made of me in Washington was that I never acted like a senator. And that don't mean to say that I don't have some ego, but I don't have the kind that's got to project me out front of. Now, I may get there because I'm fighting about something, but I may not. I'm not out there just to get to be out front. I wish I had some of the years ago. It served us well.
As you say, it served him well, and it served the school well.
Yes, it did.
Not as much for him. I have had a tremendous. As a member of the faculty, we've all, you know, been Leo watchers and looking at it. But from this perspective of the historical, all along, I've come increasingly to be impressed with his.
I'm sure that, and I have felt that through the years, some departments of the university maybe were a little bit disturbed at so much emphasis being put on medical school and this department or that department. But the truth is, you couldn't do it all. Mm-hmm. And we'll say, by reason of the university status and by reason of the medical school, I'm sure that the history department, the English department, all have become stronger. Now, if you'd have singled out, we'll say history or political science, sure, you know, you would have done more for it, but you couldn't do it all. And when you recognize that, I think you'd have to concede that overall it's been good for the university as a whole.
I think so. I think that's very true. They say any place, a med school is a parasite, no matter if it's here, Carolina, Duke, anywhere. But on the balance, what it has then added to the image.
Well, if you go off in New York or somewhere and you're talking about your professor at East Carolina University, and they say, well, where is that? Well, it's in Greenville. And what's there? And well, we've got medical school. We have school of art. We have school of music. And you talk about all of these departments. No matter if you don't even mention your own department, it gives you more clout.
Yeah, I saw you had Sports Illustrated.
That's my ballpark. I'm not very much interested. I follow East Carolina games.
But you saw that article in Sports Illustrated.
No.
Oh, that's an article on East Carolina. It's in this week.
Well, I'm glad you told me. I didn't know it, but I
was in there reading it. The man was on campus for a couple of days, and he had talk with me about some of the background of the town. This is a very nice article.
Well, I'm glad you told me. My law partner loves sports, and he has a son in East Carolina, too. So.
Oh, well, you know, I'll show it to you when I leave. It's a very nice, positive article on... they were doing it just before we played Temple, and they said, now, of course, if you don't win, we're not going to run it. because of the, said, you know, they wanted to, but they thought we would, so they spent the time to...
Well, how are you coming on your history?
I am writing now in the university status, and in the fight I had saved you till I was there and could get all the background and pretty much filled in about that, and so I'm hoping by around the first of the year to get the first draft. Then it'll take probably a year to go through all of the steps of publication. We're wanting to make it a illustrated version of volume as well as having a historical narrative.
Well, so, I think it ought to be recorded. I don't know how many people would ever use it, but as a historical reference, it ought to be done.
And I've been so impressed that we have such a creditable past, beginning with, well, Dr. Wright, I think has been sort of overshadowed, but it was a fabulous, well-developed school. I think Meadows was not a real asset.
No, I don't remember that much about him. I was a freshman, you know, when he was a freshman and sophomore, and I don't remember that much
about him. Oh, I felt like, and I was with different ones I talked with, and Dr. Howell and all that we just have to include in the book because it was a public record, is the criminal trial, and it doesn't matter that you can't write the history of East Carolina without it. So that's been giving me a lot of, quite much problem trying to figure out the whole thing. I really don't think he was a criminal. I think he had come to look upon East Carolina as his to such a degree.
Many of them do that. We've got the same trouble with the Smithsonian right now. Dylan Ripley got in trouble because he just treated it as his empire. I don't believe, I agree with you, I've heard the nasty rumors about Dr. Messick, but I have never heard them from a credible source, and there was never any report made to the Board of Trustees.
Well, I said that's something, since it was never public, I certainly don't have to address, and I'm relieved about that. I have wondered, though, if there was some political, knowing the viciousness that came out later, and it was under Messick that we first heard university status. I mean, he was the one who first raised the question.
Is that right? I didn't know
that. Yeah, he started talking that as early as 52 and started working on a doctorate in education. And with the tremendous growth that came under Messick, and that battle for the nursing school was his, you know. And Dr. Jenkins was there, but he was.
Messick was carrying the ball.
Yeah, he was carrying the ball.
Walter Jones ought not to be forgotten.
Yeah.
Walter was, you know, I was young in the legislature, and Walter, while I was there in the Senate, Walter was carrying that ball in the House.
He's involved in this too late that day. The court has appointed a lawyer for them, and they can't remember his name. It says something like, they're trying to say McCormick. Would it be him?
McCormick, Ed down here. Ed McCormick.
Next type of
thing. Down one block down here.
One block.
Mm-hmm. There is no question but what he had generated a great deal of animosity in the establishment that I've talked to you about.
Yeah.
And there's nothing in my book, there's nothing in my opinion, that Governor Hodges would not have done to get rid of him. He was a thorn in his side. And you know, as you mentioned, I began to recall that Herbert Ward something, this thing. There was something about a meeting in the governor's office. Now, you got to remember, I was very new. I was on the board only because Governor Hodges got in a jam. And I was never privy to any of it, but there was a meeting in the governor's office. You probably, anybody that told you about it?
No, not that.
Have you asked Leo?
Leo said, said, you mean you don't know about all that? And I said, well, I'm not sure whether I do or not, because I've heard a lot of different stories, but I really haven't heard. He said, well, I can't be the one to tell you.
Well, you know, I've always been right honest with you. I've always thought Leo was a little too harsh on Dr. Messick. You know, he doesn't hardly recognize him when he comes there. But whatever it was, I was not privy to it, and I'm sure Ms. Umstead was not. And I don't know, but it happened in Hodges' office. And I can tell you, Hodges was a vicious man.
I have gotten the impression in looking at the letter files between Governor Hodges and Harris Perks, who was the chairman of the board, not the chairman, but the director of the Board of Higher Education, the deputy secretary, I guess, at that earlier period before Archie came in, they are carrying on a correspondence, and Perks would send Governor Hodges that I'm sending you copies of letters from our dear friend John Messick. I thought you wanted to keep in your files. And then there'll be some back. And it looks like there's something that they have an understanding about that makes you wonder. And knowing how much Hodges resented what Messick was doing, that's what I was wondering, if there was some political, not again that I would work for this.
Well, I am sure nothing would have pleased him more. Governor Hodges, I liked him and I admired the good things about him, but he had been big business and he could not tolerate anybody different with him. I first went to the Senate in 1955, and Henry Bridges was he was promoting a bill to do away with pre-audit powers of the auditor. And what that was the auditor, before you build a building, the auditor had to certify that the funds were appropriated for this purpose. And Hodges took that power away from him. And I opposed it on the grounds that, look, it may be a close question, but if you already build a building, or if you do so-and-so, it can't be undone. And one day, Senator Robert Morgan from Cleveland County, who was one of the Governor Hodges' lieutenants, came to see me. And you know, Robert, if I were you, I wouldn't oppose the governor's bill. I said, well, you know, Robert, what bill are you talking about? And he told me, I said, well, I didn't know that was the governor's bill, but I said, it's wrong. He said, well, said, you know, you might want something someday. You might want to appoint somebody to the trustees, or you might want to do so and so. Well, you know, I was brand new in politics. I said, well, I didn't think he was that kind of man. If he is, he can go to hell as far as I'm concerned. And he and I never had any real close rapport, even after I was in the Senate before his death. We were friendly and a little more cordial.
I apologize for interrupting, but Mr. Shaw, Terrell wants to know if anybody home at your house.
No,
he's
but I got the key. No, tell him, here's the key, though. I didn't know, I was going to leave the back door.
And he'll have to come by here and pick it up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I can't leave the office because I'm waiting for that call from San Francisco. But the only reason that he appointed me to the board in 1958 was there was a power play between somebody in Greenville who wanted to be on the board and somebody else. And it just so happened, hold a minute, I'm not sure he's here, but let me see if I can find him. John Phelps. Anyway, I was in Naval Reserve duty in 1958 in Charleston, South Carolina, and he called me and offered it to me. And I was so skeptical of him that I declined it. I said, you know, and he said, now wait. He said, I know what you're thinking. He said, you're thinking that I'm trying to buy you. He said, just keep your mind open until you come home. And then come to see me. And when I did, then he offered it to me. And I took it. But he offered it to me only because I was president of the Alumni Association at the time, and therefore a logical choice. Law office. Yeah. Right. Hey, Dwight, how you doing? Well, I was looking for a call from San Francisco, and I figured screw it. Marsha, take line one, please. Got a complicated phone system.
Yeah, I want somebody to take word, Marshall.
No, I'm not.
Right.
Is this call expected? Is it going to be probably a long?
No, well, it may. Dwight, they're all gone to vote. Sorry, name by myself. No, I hadn't seen them. Okay. It probably be about 10 minutes.
Oh, okay. I didn't want to.
It's a conference call. That's the reason I'm.
I was wanting to.
But anyway, we're getting back to what we're saying about Hodges. I recall now that, and I believe Herbert Waldrop, who served as the chairman of the board and really was his flunky, was in on that meeting. And it did take place in the governor's office. And it I could recall it, and we're talking a little while, but that you'll find that's where it came from.
I thought that there was some, or could be some pressure from Hodges in there. And I got the impression he wasn't too eager to have Dr. Jenkins.
I don't really know about it. I'm sure they didn't want anybody that bucked Chapel Hill, because he was old well type too. But, you know, I really reflecting a little bit and remembering Hodges and remembering Messick hanging around the legislature and all that, I rather suspect that there might have been a rumor and that they seized on that.
Yeah, that's exactly what. That he might have been either vulnerable or apparent to that. Yeah. Rumor or something that it was used.
I never believed it myself. I never believed.
Well, I don't think it's one of those things you can't disprove, and therefore he's vulnerable just for the question of it being raised. But I just wondered if it wasn't politically motivated because he was so active, and I think that's another thing. Dr. Jenkins was certainly. In every area, he was so clear not to be, seemed to be caught up, but he was very vulnerable in being a critic. I mean, and they're wanting him.
Well, you know, don't you know that before Oral Roberts University hired John Messick, that they would have done background checks and studies, and don't you know that as prone as people are to criticize, that somebody would have passed that rumor on, and then they would have immediately checked it out if it had been any credits to it.
I would think so, that it was one of those things by innuendo or by whispering, probably. If it was designed to get him out, it did.
Had there been anybody else there, probably then Hodges in that power structure, it would have been ignored and deterrent labeled ludicrous, and that would have ended it.
I had developed a tremendous respect for East Carolina's as an impact upon higher education in North Carolina as a sort of catalyst in the 60s.
Well, it was.
With you and Dr. Jenkins as the battering ram. I think I've seen some cartoons of you all in that.
I tell you what, there were many a night he'd call me at midnight. And I'd call him, and you know, I don't care who you are, there's nobody so iron-willed that you can take all the abuse that we took by yourself without at least talking about it. And he and I talked about it many a night.
I'm sure it must have been a tremendous both drain and vulnerability to it was a tremendously exciting time, though.
No, it was. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Really did.
And before that phone call comes in, could you write me a note?
Yeah, I'll have to let me get some stationery. My oldest secretaries, except Lucille, my secretary, go to class on this one. Excuse me just one second. Me a copy.
Sure.
The thing about it is I really have intended to do it. As you well know, you don't recall things unless you have somebody to sit down and talk with. If you had told me to ask me to write it down, I probably wouldn't have remembered a third of what we got down there. Maybe I stick it in my file somewhere in case we ever decide to. I don't think I'll ever use it or do anything with it.
I think it's a significant record, and that's one of the byproducts of working on this history is I have been able to interview a lot of people that have so involved with East Carolina, and I mean nobody more so than you. I have one or two questions I was wanting to ask you about that I see on the list. The one thing that really intrigued me when you were a student, I noticed you were a college marshal. And I don't recall that there was any
I can tell you it sure didn't come from academic achievements, I can promise you that.
Well, you were the only man in the college marshal that had been traditionally for outstanding achievements.
I expect that.
You recall that?
Was it before or after the war?
Before.
I expect all the older people, men were off at war. I don't know. I really don't remember. I remember being a marshal, but my academic records, I hope they didn't make those available to me.
No, I haven't looked.
But I don't, I was active in things, but I don't
remember. Well, you were the only man among the marshals, and I have not ever seen another man in the marshals before or since. Which is a very distinctive record.
Well, I didn't know that. I don't really remember.
It may have been that in the transition they were beginning.
Well, you know, that was a time to work with about 50 men there.
Yeah, it was a very, very few.
But I don't know where I would have been. I really don't know.
Probably. That's just one of the unusual things that I just done. But I'll be glad to send you a copy of this.
If you don't mind, if it's any problem.
Because of that, we'll type it up and edit out the absolutely extraneous that doesn't have anything to do with the interview, and I'll be glad to send it.
The Senate, at their suggestion, we had historians and they did a several oral history interviews of people. Here again, I doubt I'll ever use and doubt anybody will ever be that interested, but it's sort of good to have around.
I mean, it's excellent, and you just don't have any idea the various uses it can be in time. This is when I get in and look at some of these records, I think I may want to call you and ask you if there's something I don't quite understand. The problem with this right now, of course, is the
length.